Well, we are wrapping up this series that we've been doing on work, and I hope you've enjoyed it. It's been kind of a fun one for me. And I want to look at work as we end this from a slightly different angle, and that's this. How can you change the culture, the environment, wherever it is you work? And of course, we all work. We all spend the majority of our time doing different things. For some of us, it's an office or a factory or a hospital or a classroom. Perhaps you work remotely, you work from home. Maybe you work in the home. And so what I want to get at today is no matter where or how you work, we're going to look at one verse and one principle. And if we would actually apply this, has incredible power to transform that culture, has an incredible power to shift, to change the environment around you again, wherever it is you work, whatever it is you do. And so I want to give you some hopefully helpful and spiritually practical next steps. So I want to also start with just a slightly risky discussion. If you had to describe the climate, like the climate where you work, the environment in which you work, if you had to describe that with one word, how would you do that? I'm going to give you a second to share that with your neighbor. What would it be? That should be easy, right? It's just one word. And by the way, we should probably say this is not a time to vent. Okay, we can vent later on. But I'm looking for a one-word description about where you work and how you would describe that. So just take 30 seconds, turn, share with your neighbor. And if you're sitting next to your boss, be careful. Okay, go ahead. This is hard, huh? All right, that sounds like more than one word. More than one word I'm hearing. Okay, so we all work in different cultures. We work in different environments. And for some of us, we work in really healthy, really helpful, really supportive environments. And then others of us, we work in unhelpful, unhealthy, sort of toxic environments. So we work with people who are overly competitive. We work in scenarios where we have to walk on eggshells all the time around certain people. Again, where it's not healthy. Of course, no movie better captures an unhealthy, unhelpful work environment than the movie. Yeah, isn't that amazing? Office Space. How have I not used this in this series yet? Here you go.
Hello, Peter.
What's happening?
We have sort of a problem here.
Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out.
Did you see the memo about this? Yeah. Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just forgot. But it's not shipping out till tomorrow, so there's no problem.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
Yeah, no, I have the memo. I've got it. It's right.
Hello, Phil.
All right. Talk about a soul-crushing environment to work in. I think one of the reasons that's become like we all said the movie, it's got like a cult following, is because so many people relate to that personally. Sometimes when it comes to basically our work culture climate, I think sometimes we think, well, I'm not the boss, and I'm not in charge, and so there's really nothing I can do to change anything, to influence anything. And so I guess what I'll do is I'll resign myself to just showing up, keeping my head down, do my job, and that's it. In other words, sort of like a thermometer, we end up basically then reflecting the temperature and the attitudes around us. And that's what a thermometer does, right? Just reflects. It just gauges the temperature. It doesn't change anything itself. It just reflects what currently is. And a lot of you, you know, if I asked you to describe the climate where you work, you could probably name all the healthy things. You could probably name the things that aren't so healthy. But if I said to you, what could you do? What could you personally do about the unhealthy, unhelpful things? Many of us, again, would say what? Nothing, because I'm not in charge, or I tried and they didn't listen and I left my comment and I gave the review and all, and it doesn't change anything. But here's what we failed to realize. We actually have far more power to change, to influence, to reset the climate around us. More than we think. Sort of the difference between a thermometer and a thermostat. And I realize that a thermostat also gives the temperature. But in addition, a thermostat does what? It sets the temperature or resets the temperature. Thermostat can change the climate in your home almost in real time. Anyone have someone they fight with over the setting, the thermostat? And then they change it, and then you go back behind when they're not there and you put it back. There's a big difference between these two things. And I think in a very real way, this captures the choice that we have where we work. In other words, you have the power to just reflect what you see around you in terms of attitude, in terms of climate. You can reflect it and say that's just the way it is. And by the way, that's just a thermometer and it is powerless. Or you can reset it. You can influence the climate around you. And by the way, this is true whether or not you're in charge, however long you've been there, whatever your title it is, whatever kind of work it is you're doing. God has given you this powerful tool to influence the climate. And here's the other thing about this. You've had this tool with you your whole life. You've had it at every job you've ever had. You already have this with you. Tomorrow, when you go into work, you have this at your disposal. Now, we may not realize it and we may not fully appreciate its ability, but we have always and will have this potential with us. And so I want to talk about what that is and then how we can learn to use it well. So if you have a Bible, please turn with me to Ephesians chapter 4. And just a bit of context here, this isn't a book, this is actually a letter, and it's written by the Apostle Paul, who's one of the greatest leaders in church history. He wrote a significant portion of the New Testament. And he's writing here to the believers, to fellow Christians, living in the first century city of Ephesus. And what we have to know about Ephesus is that it had like a really oppressive culture toward Christians, that it wasn't very faith-friendly. And so Paul's writing to encourage them. He's wanting to remind them of who they were and who God's calling them to be. And so throughout the letter, he's giving them ways that they can shine bright in the darkness, in the culture that surrounded them. And so we're going to look at just one verse, Ephesians 4, 29. And just to kind of keep us going with participation, when I pause, when I'm reading, that's your cue to just say out loud the next word, okay? So I pause, you shout it out. That way we can all participate, and it's really easy. This is like an open book test with the answers literally on the board in front of you. So here we go. Do not let any unwholesome talk, that's a funny word and we'll get to that in a minute, come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may those who listen. Now, a lot to unpack here, but Paul, right out of the gate, he says when it comes to unwholesome talk, there's no place for it in our lives. And so, question, how much unwholesome talk should I allow? None. You're with me. None. Now we got to break down this phrase because that's not something we normally say. It sounds like something your grandma would say or that would only be found like in the Bible. So what does this mean? Actually, Jesus uses the same Greek word in the Gospels. So he uses the word that Paul uses here, and Jesus uses it to describe rotten fruit. That's the connotation. Stranger Things season 2, anyone? I didn't even know a pumpkin was a fruit until like probably 2.5 weeks ago. So anyway, Paul says, here's what he's saying. That's the image behind it. Don't let any rotten words, don't let any rotten fruit come out of your mouth with the words you choose. In other words, with fruit, something that could be healthy and could be helpful, but instead is bitter and sour. And not only is it harmful to you, but especially to those around you. You ever come across a piece of rotten fruit, like an orange you forgot about in the back of the fridge? Like, what is this? Or you go and you reach for an apple and your thumb goes through it? Like, that's not right. Now, I don't know about how it is for you where you work, but for some of us, work can feel like this place where every day people around us are just like serving up like rotten, like fruit salad to us all day long. And it's really easy to join in that. It's really easy to just reflect that climate and culture. And so how do we do that? How do we join in when we shouldn't? And there's a couple of ways, and you already know this. One of them, of course, is gossip or water cooler talk. Maybe you've gotten caught up in this. Gossip about the boss, gossip about the person on the bubble. Gossip, by definition, is simply talking about someone without their being there. Like you're adding your spin, you're adding your story without them present. And so that's an easy one. Paul says there's no room for that in your life. No one wins when you serve that up. Another one, slander. That's a word the Bible uses. Slander is taking gossip to the next level. It's an intentionally malicious attack on a person's character. That's where you start spreading the story. You go after the person. You attack their character. And whether or not it's true, by the way, of course, in our minds, we're always convinced it is. But in reality, it is rarely that cut and dried. Now, that our words can be really, really powerful, especially at work. How else? Sarcasm. That's a good one, right? Sarcasm can be a passive-aggressive way of making your point while trying to get a laugh, and we mask it with humor. I'm just messing. I'm just joking. But there's like a point behind it that everybody realizes. And by the way, like an arrow, it always finds its target. Crude jokes, you know, emails that you pass along, you know, that's inappropriate, as your mom would say. Anytime you make racist or sexist comments, anytime you brush over people with like a broad stroke, oh, you know, we don't deal with those kinds of people. Paul says that is not healthy. Angry outbursts. You ever work with somebody with a short fuse and they just blow up? And they start screaming or swearing. And, you know, does that feel healthy, helpful, or fun to be around? No. Maybe you've had a few of those yourself where you work. And then another one, anytime you lie at work, look, I almost made a Christmas tree. I was trying to think of a smaller one. I couldn't figure it out. But, okay, so we don't like to think of it like we're lying, so... Anytime you fudge the facts, anytime you round up to your advantage, that's unwholesome, unhealthy, rotten fruit. And it never gets you what you want or what you think it's going to get you in the end. And so here's the thing. If you're engaging in any of these, and I bet you can think of some more examples from where you work. Paul says, if you're engaged in any of this, his advice is very simple. Stop it. That's basically what he's saying. Stop doing that. Cut that out. It's not helping anyone around you. It's not moving anything forward. It's actually not changing the climate. All you're doing is reflecting, like a thermometer, the culture around you. I think we live in an interesting cultural moment right now. If you doubt like the power of words spoken publicly, look around. Because pretty much every other day now in the news is someone in power saying, and not just doing, but often saying something inappropriate. Using words very inappropriately. So just notice that if you question the power of words. Or I think about the way that we use social media. This is a big one. Or comment boards online. And there's just like no accountability at all. We just put stuff out there. We say things we would never say to another person face to face. And here's the tragedy. Some of us, our lives in some ways have been defined by like four or five sentences casually uttered to us or about us. You're ugly. You're fat. You're a loser. No one would want to be with you. You're an idiot. And these things make their way into our hearts. And like years later, we understand that they don't know what they're talking about or whatever, but years later, we can find, in spite of all of our behavior and our accomplishments, there's still that deep sense of insecurity. That's come, again, from a sentence or two that someone spoke to you. You ever have that feeling? Almost like you've been cursed by something, and it just kind of haunts you and just follows you around. It's like, why am I not getting over this? And it just, yeah, it's like this spell that we're trying to get out from underneath. When I was in college, I was preparing for pastoral ministry. I felt called to be a pastor and was moving in that direction. And I'll never forget, I was talking with an older person in my life, someone who'd had a lot of influence for a lot of years, who I really looked up to, I really respected and admired. And I told this person about my passion and about where I sense God calling me, and I'm in this kind of decision-making process. And I will never forget, we're sitting down, and this person, he looks at me and he says, and I think he meant well, but he said one or two sentences along the lines of, "I'm not sure that you have what it takes." Yeah, I didn't laugh, but you know, I can laugh now. No, not only was that discouraging, but that, because again, I gave him so much admiration and respect, it just kind of drilled down into my heart and shook me to my core. Here's the crazy thing. That was years ago. I still remember it. And there are times when I have a bad week or I'm facing a challenge I don't know how to solve. Guess what I see and hear? His face saying those words, "I'm not sure you have what it takes." And in my mind, I go, huh, yeah, maybe I don't. Maybe I don't. Maybe he was right all along. I want you to go back in your mind to a moment when someone spoke hurtful, harsh, unhelpful words to you, because we all have this. A parent, a teacher, a coach, a boss. I bet you know exactly where you were sitting, exactly how that felt. And maybe, again, these words have come to define a part of you to this day. So my point with bringing that up is, if you know how it feels, like we know how it feels to be on the other side of those words, on that side, imagine how it feels to be on, like, the giving side, like from your words to another person. Because we've all been on the giving end of harsh, hurtful, unhealthy things. And you know how you spoke to them. Instead of building them up, you tore them down. And Paul says, you don't have to do that. There's another way. Your words are far more powerful than you realize. And then he tells us, here's how we can reset the climate around us. Again, this is in our homes and in our relationships and even where we work. It says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. I mean, this is really simplistic, but essentially what Paul is saying is you have a choice. Your words can build someone up, or you can use them to kind of beat somebody up. You can build other people up every day, every week, at work, whatever you do, you get to make this choice. Can you imagine if you went to work tomorrow and you just decided that tomorrow you're gonna make it your goal, your job, to be like the epicenter of encouragement to the people around you? And you just decided, look, I have like these, my regular tasks and my roles and my responsibility, but I know today, I know what my real job is. I mean, that would give a whole new sense of purpose to your work, wouldn't it? That would give a whole new sense of meaning to the interactions you have with boss, coworkers, people you supervise. So my question is, what does this look like to do that, to build others up? And I want to just give a couple of thoughts. If you want to write these down, perhaps they're helpful. Number one, I think it starts by noticing people. Look what Paul says. We build others up according to what? According to their needs. That means that we're to choose our words not just purposefully, but also personally. And to do that, you have to actually notice people. You have to see people as unique individuals that have certain things that drive them, their values, things that are important to them. Only then, once you notice someone and truly see them for who they are, only then can you offer words that would specifically breathe life into them. By the way, how much of Jesus' ministry revolved around him seeing people that nobody else saw? Right, he's walking along one day, he's like, whoa, whoa, pause, time out. Who touched me? And the disciples are like, there's like a huge crowd of people. So he's like, nope, somebody touched me. And he stops and he pays attention to this one woman. Or another time he's walking on the way to Jerusalem and he's like, whoa, hang on. Little guy up in the tree, we're gonna talk. And we're changing our plans. This is what we're doing now for the evening. Or you think about with like little kids, they can't tithe, they can't do anything for Jesus. And he says, no, let them come to me. I want to bless them. And so we bless people by seeing their humanity, by noticing them, by acknowledging what they're going through. Only then can we build them up according to their needs. I heard the story about Bob Goff, and some of you remember several years ago he spoke here. And the story goes, he arrives at some other speaking engagement, and he gets to the destination airport, and he finds that there's a stretch limo waiting to pick him up with the driver. And he's like embarrassed by this, because that's not really his style, and just felt like this too much. But he gets in, and he starts talking to the driver. And he learns that this driver, he's got some challenging circumstances. He's got kids. He's working two jobs, working really hard to provide for his family in order to make ends meet. And Bob, just kind of hearing this guy's life story, just starts to feel moved with compassion for him. And he says to the driver, "Hey, can you pull over?" And he pulls over and he says, "I got a question for you. You ever sit in the back of one of these things?" And the driver's like, "Well, no, kind of usually the way it works with my job." And he says, "Listen, I've been hearing your story, and I'm listening to what you do. I'm just a lawyer, and I've written a book, but like, I'm nothing. It's not a big deal. I listen to what you do and the way that you love your family and the way that you're trying to provide for them and help them have a better future than you had with where you came from. And get in the back. I want to drive you to my hotel." And of course, only Bob Goff could pull this off. And so the guy does. He drives the driver to the hotel and gets out, and Bob opens the door for him. And then Bob has these little medals that say hero on them that he pins on people. I don't know how it works. And so he lets the guy out, and he takes one of these hero medals, and he pins it on the driver's chest, and he says, "I just want you to know that you are a hero. You're a hero." You imagine anybody else has noticed that guy like that before? Yeah, imagine the impact that can have, noticing people. I think one of the reasons, and by the way, it doesn't have to be a big thing. I think one of the reasons we don't encourage more, one of the reasons we don't turn our good intentions, because we all mean well in this area, one of the reasons we don't turn our good intentions into intentionality, two very different things, is because we think, "Well, what's the big deal? I mean, just saying, hey, I appreciate you, or thanks for what you did, or I noticed that." It's not that big of a deal. It seems insignificant. At least that's what I tell myself. But here's the thing. Encouragement is never small when you are on the receiving end of it, right? It's never small. It's never insignificant when you're the one getting encouragement from someone else. Secondly, I think we can call out character and not just accomplishments. I mean, calling out accomplishment, that's fine. Hey, great job, well done, you know, you killed it, or whatever. I mean, that's kind of what we do in part at work, and that's fine. But when you speak to someone's character, now you're getting down to the core of who they are. Not just what they do, but who they are. Which means, you know, speaking to someone's character means someone consistently shows up on time, or heaven forbid, early, okay? You know, it's saying to that person, "Look, I really appreciate what you're doing. You are all in. And I am grateful for that kind of attitude around here. That actually inspires me, so thank you." Or you come out of a meeting with coworkers and it was like, whew, it was rough. And calling out character, saying to this person, "Man, I really appreciate when the boss was lighting you up, that you didn't power up and fight back. And I don't know that I have that kind of self-control at the moment, but just, wow, I mean, I'm learning that from you, so thank you." I got an incredibly nice card from someone here just the other day. And not only did they notice things, you know, some things I'm doing or accomplishments or whatever, but what meant the most to me was that they picked a few things, kind of like my personality when I'm at my best, and expressed appreciation just for that. And they took up the whole card, and then the back, the whole thing. There was no more room to write. Do you think I'm gonna hold on to that for ever? Of course, absolutely. When you speak to someone's character, that's like wind in their sails. That's oxygen in their lungs, and so we look for opportunities to do that. Another way, celebrate someone else's win. So easy to make this all about us, so everyone can see, so we can get the credit or the promotion or the noticed or whatever. When you celebrate someone else's win, it builds them up. It creates a culture around you that it's not all about you, even if that means you're not going to get the attention for that time. And for you to say, I want to celebrate you, well done. You know what else that does? That cuts off jealousy and envy right at the pass, right from the get-go. This next one is for you specifically if you're not the boss. Thank your boss for what they do. Let me just say, as a boss, and I am a boss. You'll get it later. As a boss, I can't tell you what it means when somebody on our team says, thank you. I can't tell you what it means for me to receive those words. And so for you to say whatever you can honestly, authentically say to your boss, your manager, your supervisor, say it. You have no idea what those words mean. I'll tell you something else. Being in this role and having an opportunity to manage a little bit and to lead in this role, it's made me think back on every job I've ever had in my life where I wasn't in charge. And I've had two thoughts. Number one, whoa, that's not as easy as it looks. I really thought that was going to be. So realizing, whoa, there's like perspective and there's responsibilities and there's a way of looking at things that only like the person in that position can have or understand. And then the second thing I just realized, I was way too hard on my previous bosses. Maybe not outwardly, but in my head, like, why do they do that? And why can't they just? And if I was in charge, it would be so easy and I'd have this thing. So some humility that's come with the added role. But let your boss know you appreciate him. I think it's always best to do this in person, but text, email, just communicate it. Say something kind. Number five, say something kind about someone when they're not around. Again, that cuts off gossip at the pass. And you say, you know what, I am so thankful for Fred. I mean, you set that kind of culture around you. You do that proactively. Gossipers will ultimately stay clear of you. That's just how it works. And by the way, encouragement spoken about someone, it has a way of always finding its way back to that person. And then last one, when you do have to criticize or critique or have like a hard conversation, again, to a coworker or someone you supervise, include encouragement in your critique. I think this is probably the most important time to remember encouragement, because it's in these conversations we don't realize the ability that we have to like to tear someone down or to build them up. And so that looks like this. That looks like saying, look, I know you are so busy doing lots of important things right now, and so I totally don't blame you for not thinking about this, but that's a lot better than, why didn't you get this done? I've asked you like 8 times already. Or saying to someone, hey, on that project you did great. I mean, that was like 95% perfect. Can we talk about how we can improve that and just make it a little bit better for next time? That's a totally different feel than like, what were you thinking? And what is the matter with you? It takes a little more effort and sometimes some creativity, but it's just the way that we're wired. It just helps us be less defensive. It helps us to listen and to be more open. And I know it feels like it's a technique or it feels artificial. I don't care. I know, like you, when someone's giving me an encouragement sandwich, you know what that is? Encouragement followed by but, criticism in the middle, and then summarize with an encouraging concluding statement. I see that coming a mile away, and guess what? I still appreciate it. I would still so much rather you do that because, again, it lowers my defenses. It makes me feel like you're not just going all nitpicky or negative. It makes me feel like you understand I'm at least trying, and on and on and on. Remember encouragement when we have to have those hard conversations. Listen, again, we have no idea how powerful our words are. And so let's use them well, especially at work. Let's use our words to build up, not to tear down or to beat up, but to build people up. One quick thought here. There was a recent Harvard study, and they looked at employers and conversations in the workplace, and especially between managers and people that work for them. And the results were fascinating. They found that for every harsh, you know, really negative, critical, sort of unhealthy thing, as Paul would say, unwholesome talk. For every harsh or critical thing like someone in charge said, it took 5 encouraging statements, words of support to sort of compensate and make up for that one critical or harsh thing. And I think the same is true in our own lives. My guess is you remember criticism far more than you remember encouragement. Your words can not only change the culture around you, they can have an effect for years to come. Mother Teresa once said, "Kind words can be short and easy to speak, but their echoes are truly endless." Short and easy to speak, but their echoes are endless. And how long does this take? 30 seconds? Listen, I really appreciate what you did, or thank you, or I noticed, or again, 30 seconds. If you want to go crazy and go way next level and write a note, we're talking like 2 minutes. So not a long time. And you have no idea what that small investment of words will do. And it's not difficult, and it's not insignificant. And we all know this who've been on the receiving end. You love to receive those words of encouragement. I love to receive those words of encouragement. So let's become the kind of people who give it, who offer that intentionally, and here's the key, personally, in order to build up the people around us, in order to change the climate and the culture and the environment where we work and where we live. Would you stand? We'll pray. Heavenly Father, we, first of all, we recognize that literally everything that is around us, that you spoke that into existence, that your words are unbelievably powerful. We recognize that you've put some of that in us as well, that we can speak life or we can speak death into the people around us. And so, Lord, I pray that for those of us who manage or supervise, or those of us who are on teams, that we would just make it our goal tomorrow when we go to work to basically out-encourage everyone else. We don't have to be over the top. It can be in lots of simple, small ways, but as we know, Lord, they're not insignificant to that person. Help us to use our words to build other people up. Lord, for the person here who is kind of overwhelmed and works in a really unhealthy, unhelpful, kind of toxic environment, Lord, I pray that you'd help as they go to work tomorrow to recognize they have a new job. They have a new role. That is, how can they bless and build up and encourage the people around them? You've given them the potential to actually move the needle and to change that environment around them. And we do all of this, Lord, ultimately for your glory, that people would be drawn to you, would see more clearly who you are. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.